Welcome to Sports Day Cowboys, a podcast all about the Dallas Cowboys, brought to you by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Calvin Watkins.
And I'm Michael Gelkin. We're two Cowboys beat writers having a weekly real talk conversation about the latest with the team, including interviews, analysis, and debate. Dallas is 5-2, and now Chicago runs into town.
Run is the operative word there, Michael. Bears quarterback Justin Fields is fast! So is Micah Parsons, and so is Kevontae Turpin. This week, we'll take a deep dive on both Cowboys players who showed us a little something extra in the win against the Lions.
I don't know about you, Calvin, but when people hear that I write for the Dallas Morning News, the reaction is often, do you know Tim Kalishoff?
Do you?
I do. Not only do we know Tim, but our columnist and favorite Around the Horn panelist joins us today.
It all starts now on Sports Day Cowboys. I wasn't worried about the Lions last week, Michael. And as we begin this next segment on Sports Day Cowboys, I just wanted to say I was correct because the Lions are very scrappy. However, they were in that ball game against the Cowboys in the fourth quarter. But if not for that fumble, who knows what we might be talking about today. The Bears, meanwhile, were very impressive on Monday night against the Patriots.
45 carries, 243 yards, three different Bears players, top 60 rushing yards. Chicago ran all over the Patriots in a 33-14 win. So it is fitting that we devote our opening segment to running, concentrating on Micah Parsons and Kevontae Turpin.
You know this guy named CJ Goodwin? He's like one of the special teams guys. He would say he's the fastest guy on the team. But you know what? Between Micah Parsons and Kevontae Turpin in that game against the Lions on Sunday, Michael, who was the fastest guy on the field?
Parsons, the 245-pound, 6'3" linebacker. He, according to Next Gen Stats, reached 20.41 miles per hour in the fourth quarter when tackling Lions tight end Brock Wright from behind at the one-yard line. That saved a touchdown. And then the next play, DeMarcus Lawrence forces a fumble at the goal line. Anthony Barr recovers. Cowboys offense didn't score off the ensuing drive, but battle of field position and keeping the Lions off the scoreboard, it changed the game. And now here we're talking, Cowboys 5-2. That play, I thought, is worth taking a deeper dive into because speed matters when you're defending a run game. And you can attack Micah Parsons and run right at him, or you can run away from him. But if you run away from him, we see his speed as a backside defender in pursuit. Calvin, what do you think about the speed of the Cowboys defense to help them defend the Chicago Bears?
Well, speed is half the battle. And when you have speed, you got youth. The Cowboys have a pretty young defensive team. And the interesting thing about that play, the Micah Parsons play, he was 5 yards behind the ball carrier, and he ran past Leighton Van Der Esch, who's not very fast, and he ran past a couple other defenders, and he saved the touchdown. And you know, we're all in the press box watching the game live, but on the TV screen, CBS showed Dan Campbell taking off his headsets and just throwing them on the ground after the fumble because he was thinking he should have challenged the play that Parsons made at the goal line. Now, when we saw the replays of it the next day, the guy's knee was down. But Micah Parsons basically saved that football game for the Cowboys. And when you have speed, like with Trayvon Diggs is pretty fast. You know, I think Donovan Wilson's pretty fast too. I'm not saying he's a burner, but I think he's pretty quick as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if you said Dante Fowler is pretty fast too, because the Cowboys got a lot of speed on that defense, and that means you can get to the ball to make plays, and that's what Dan Quinn wants. But I want to ask you, Michael, about one of your favorite players, Kevontae Turpin, because he had a 52-yard punt return. How fast was my boy Turpin going?
So whereas Parsons was going 20.41 miles per hour, according to Next Gen Stats, Turpin, 19.31.
Woo-wee. Now, I thought when I watched it, I was like, he's moving fast, and I think he's going to get a touchdown. But they caught him. And that just says everything about this team, that you know, there's an old cliche when they say speed kills. Maybe that's why the Cowboys are where they are right now in the division.
No doubt. And I think it's interesting because it seems like there's this weekly conversation as to, is this the week that Kevontae Turpin and the Cowboys are going to get their first return touchdown of the year? Is this the week? Is this the week? Well, it was almost a week last week, and Turpin was not the problem there. But I think I'm going to highlight the reason why he was tackled there on the 52-yarder, because I think it shows just how close the Cowboys were. Malik Davis, he's an undrafted rookie. He was elevated for the second straight week in place of Rico Dattle, injured reserve ankle. Malik Davis, he was in the punt return team, and he engaged with the Lions player who ends up making the tackle on Turpin. And it looked like Davis was pretty much out of the play in terms of he and this guy that he was blocking. But there was this moment where Davis had to make the decision, all right, do I keep blocking him or do I look for work that's a little bit more relevant seemingly to the play? Turns out that guy, again, makes that play. And it was a bit of a reminder that even when you think you're not in it as a young player blocking on special teams, you still can be the difference because of Turpin's dynamism and ability to just make it a foot race. And so that's what happened there. The Lions player was able to make the angle and close down on a 19.31 reaching Turpin. But we will say about Turpin, he's faster than 19.31. He's topped 20 miles per hour in the preseason. I think he's topped 21 miles per hour in the preseason. Come very close, right around there. So this guy can burn, and at some point, it's going to be six, but not yet. The wait continues.
If you're wondering why we're talking about speed, it's because on Sunday, the Chicago Bears will come to town, and they got a speedy quarterback, Justin Fields. And Mike, I don't know if you were up late like I was and watching that Bears-Patriots game. I'm going to tell you something. Justin Fields is fast. And after that game, I had texted someone on the Cowboys coaching staff. I had asked them, who is faster, Justin Fields, who the Cowboys are going to play on Sunday, or Jalen Hurts, who the Cowboys had played a couple of weeks ago in Philly on a Sunday night. And that coach told me Justin Fields is faster. And this is going to be a track meet, as we said. And there's another guy who's quick, too, on this Bears team, Dante Pettis, the wide receiver. He had a run for 20 miles an hour, one of the fastest runs in that Bears-Patriots game. When we talk about speed on the defense for the Cowboys, they got to match up well with the speed of the Bears, no doubt about it. I mean, this game is going to be unbelievable.
But the difference is between Jalen Hurts and Justin Fields is that Jalen Hurts is, at this stage of his career, is much more of a threat with his arm than Fields is today. You remember early when the Cowboys played, it was 2020, Mike Nolan was still the defensive coordinator. He had C.J. Goodwin spy Jalen Hurts, and he could get away with C.J. Goodwin playing, you know, a substantial number of defensive snaps for this role because Hurts couldn't really win consistently with his arm. That's more or less where Fields is, where you want him to beat you with his arm. He has not thrown for 210 passing yards in a single game this season, and he's completed only 56% of his passes. And so this is the guy that you want, again, contain him in the pocket, either with design runs, something that he does, but also after those initial 2.3 seconds of a play, he's a threat to beat you with his legs thereafter. Contain him, make him throw against you. That's how the Cowboys can keep the lid on the Bears, which really every other team before the Patriots on Monday night had been able to do successfully. We will now turn to one of our top two favorite sports columnists here at the Dallas Morning News, in no particular order, Tim Kalishaw. He's next.
All right. Tim Kalishaw is a longtime columnist at the Dallas Morning News. Long time, meaning 24 years as a columnist. We have a silver anniversary next summer, 37 years total. He was a beat writer for the Cowboys during the Jimmy Johnson years, and now he's been a columnist for the Chan Gailey, Dave Campbell, Bill Parcells, Wade Phillips, Jason Garrett, and now the Mike McCarthy years. He has also covered the Rangers and Stars. And a quick little story. I thought Tim had moved to Jersey a couple of years ago, well, maybe 30 years ago, and covered the New Jersey Devils. But I was wrong. Imagine that. Born in Tulsa, an Oklahoma man, born and bred, the one and only Mr. Tim Kalishaw. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Calvin. And I did live in New Jersey as a youth, but about 30 years ago, I moved to San Francisco and covered the Giants, you have me on the wrong coast covering the wrong sport.
You know, I also thought you covered the San Jose Sharks. No?
No. I did work for the San Jose Mercury News covering the Giants. So that's where you got twisted up.
Classic mix up.
Yeah, but don't hire me to do your resume because I'm going to mess it all up.
Classic Calvin mix up, but it is a thrill and an honor to be here with you and Michael.
Since we're talking about anniversary, memory lane, 20 years ago Thursday, Emmitt Smith breaks the all-time rushing record. Calvin at the time is writing about high school sports for the Dallas Morning News. I am playing in high school sports at Granite Hills High School in El Cajon, California.
There you go.
Tim, you were there, correct? What do you remember about that day, that record?
Apparently, I don't remember it as accurately as I'd like to, because I talked to Calvin about this before the game Sunday, and he said I wrote that Chad Hutchinson, that Jerry Jones had replaced Quincy Carter with Chad Hutchinson, and I just stated it like a fact, like, not like it was my opinion. And given that Dave Campo was the coach, maybe it was a fact. I don't know. I remember they lost the game, but you know, I remember Emmitt was, you know, he was just piling up and piling up the yards. And we figured out fairly early in his career, this guy might have a chance to catch Walter Payton, which at the time, over 14,000 yards, that seemed kind of undoable. And, of course, Emmitt shot about 3,000 yards past it by the time he was finished.
It is amazing when you look back, you know, on that time, because, you know, we got this big package running online at DallasNews.com and in a paper about what Emmitt did 20 years ago. And when you look at the footage, it's kind of blurry. Like my kids, when I tell my kids about Earl the Pro Monroe, how he's this great player, and they look it up at YouTube, they go, it's black and white and the footage is blurry. And then when I look at Emmitt Smith, it was blurry. All the coverage, the videos of it. There was no HD back in 2002?
Pre-HD, and maybe the camera. I wouldn't say maybe the cameraman weren't as good, but they're all the same. It's still AP and all the same guys locally. But, yeah, that is funny. And it does, even just 20 years ago, the game looks kind of different when you watch it and you see how teams pre-snap, how they looked and everything. And it's you don't recognize it when you're watching it, but the game constantly gets faster. So even when you look at some of those highlights from the 90s, and we think of that as maybe the best era of football because the Cowboys and 49ers were so good, there are times like the defense looks like it's moving kind of slow. It's like, come on, guys, except for Dion, you know, speed it up. Get up to speed here.
When you see Micah Parsons, that's speed, isn't it?
Yeah, that is speed. And I haven't been around, I haven't seen many players that really stood out as something completely different. Because even with the 90s Cowboys, Troy, Emmitt, and Michael kind of went together as this trio. And we'd argue back and forth about who was more responsible for everything. But Micah, other than having Diggs back there making all those interceptions, Micah just... that he has an honest chance to be the best defensive player the Cowboys have ever had. And they had Bob Lilly and they had Randy White. And they've had great Hall of Fame talent, but he seems like he truly, I have to imagine there's a lot of scouts in a lot of teams looking at college linebackers who don't rush the passer, trying to figure out their speed and saying, can this guy be the next Micah Parsons? Because it's incredible that the Cowboys got him with really no design on him as a pass rusher. And then he's forced into it in week two against the Chargers. And he may end up being the greatest pass rusher they ever had.
It does speak to his versatility. It speaks to how rare he is. I think any team would be making a mistake if they were trying to find the next Micah Parsons, given, like you said, he's so unique. It took us this long to find the first one.
Right.
But
that doesn't mean they won't be searching, trying to.
Right. But he is part of a defense that theoretically just got better on Tuesday with the acquisition of Jonathan Hankins to the run defense. What kind of, we talk a lot about this defense. We've seen it really lead the way in terms of why the Cowboys are 5-2, but how good do you think this defense is of all the Cowboys defenses you have covered?
I think it's got a chance to be there, probably a little ahead of the 90s defenses, which as good as they were, and they were ranked number one, one of the years they won the Super Bowl, you know, they're partly ranked number one because they're playing opposite an offense that, again, had Troy Michael and Emmett driving the ball down the field and scoring 30 points a week, and the defense got to play with the lead all the time. But I think we're finding out, I mean, not so much against Detroit. I thought Detroit at full speed could have run the ball maybe a little better, but they didn't. And now we'll see with the Bears. The Bears are the number one rushing yardage team in the league, and we'll see. And they looked really good last night. Now, I don't know if they can look good again 6 days later, but, you know, if they shut down that running game and control Fields, we know the rest of the defense. We know they got the pass rush. We know they can make the plays in the secondary. So everything else seems to be in play. So I think it has a chance to be the best.
When you look at this season, the Cowboys have been playing so well without Dak Prescott, and yet they're in third place in the division. You know, and yes, they beat the Giants in New York, and they lost to Philly on that Sunday night. But considering what they lost in Dak, they didn't have Michael Gallup when the season started. They lost their starting left tackle before the season started as well. Are you kind of surprised where they are right now?
I have to say I am, and I have to say one of the many things that I've been wrong about, and it's a long list, would be the rookie left tackle, because I thought, like a lot of people, but and I don't try to analyze players when they draft them like I'm some scout. I'm just
you're talking to two super scouts right now. Me and Michael.
I know. So I'm dealing with the real scouting department in Dallas right now. But when you're coming out of Tulsa, you're not coming out of Alabama or Georgia, and you led the country in penalties or holding penalties or whatever, and you're going to get thrown in, and you get thrown in at guard mostly through training camp, and then a couple of weeks before the season with no Tyron Smith, they say, okay, go back to playing tackle. That just looked like that would be a disaster to me. And I thought there'd be weekly holding penalties and weekly, you know, if not sacks, but big mistakes. And they've had other issues on the line too with other injuries, but all of that is held up. So it's a credit to the scouts and a credit mainly to him. And that's what I thought on top of losing Dak would really bring this down. Now, having said all that, this team's 29th in total offense. They're not having to do a whole lot to win these games other than not turn the ball over and make a few plays here and there. And they probably won't have to do a whole lot of that, more than that this week, but there will come a time, certainly when they play the Eagles again, certainly when they get to the playoffs, that this offense has to play at a higher level.
We talk a lot on the show, Tim, about Kellen Moore. And sometimes our opinions can fade. We can be prisoners of the moment. We can talk about the latest, and it kind of change week by week how we feel, how we view, how the conversation's tone goes. What's your perspective of just, you mentioned the offense, lack of efficiency. We're seeing Kellen be less creative in terms of conceptually sophisticated, like just more like flashy type concepts. We're seeing less of that, but it seems like he's dialing it back because this is a run-oriented offense and they have a great defense that they're tilting their game plan toward them. Are you okay with it not being the banner offense for Kellen Moore in a classical sense that we've become accustomed to seeing last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to accept they're not going to be that, and people still don't want to acknowledge that Amari Cooper was pretty good around here, and that he'll be missed. But I just think, when I think of Kellen Moore, and it's unfair, but I think of, and you guys would probably know, it was the fourth or fifth play of the season opener against Tampa Bay. They're moving the ball, two or three standard plays, and then here comes the reverse to CeeDee Lamb, and he's throwing it backwards to Pollard. And Pollard ended up with a -8 rushing on the play, which screwed his stats for the whole first game. Mm-hmm. It's like, you don't have to do that. And last year it was the Cedric Wilson throwing the lateral passes 20 yards, you know, from the sideline to the middle of the field or whatever. It's like, you don't need to do that stuff to show you're a genius or whatever. Just do what you do and do it well. And obviously he deserves some of the credit this year for all the things we've talked about, all the players they've missed, starting at quarterback and holding it together. And even in not getting a lot of yards, just having a smooth operation, not turning the ball over, making enough plays to win all these games. In general, I think we talk about offensive coordinators as scapegoats too much. I think it's usually the easiest one when a team is disappointing, to when a play doesn't work, to always say in hindsight, boy, what a terrible call. And these guys are really open to more criticism now because of all the teams going for it on fourth down as often as they are, that you're really even putting more plays out there to second guess. So having said all that, I mean, I think he's doing a really good job this year, and I don't mind him toning down the things that he might have thought made his style special.
I think your claim to fame, obviously, is the Cowboys and working for the great Dallas Morning News. But I believe you became an international superstar thanks to Around the Horn. And I don't know.
514 career wins, I believe.
Wow, you're up to date through yesterday. That's impressive. I wasn't sure of the number. I knew I'd soared past Cy Young and 5'11" about a month ago. But yes, that's what brought the international fame. And speaking of anniversaries, the 20th anniversary is in November. We will have been on the air 20 years, which is really crazy from a television standpoint, given how long most shows of any type last.
So will you get like a big cake that says 20 on it with a bunch of candles? What are you guys going to do?
I don't know. I have a sense that Kornheiser and Wilbon got more last year for their 20th anniversary than we're going to get for ours. But there is going to be a one-hour, honestly, there is going to be a one-hour primetime special one night.
Oh, wow.
That we've all been interviewed for. And the main thing to watch isn't the interviews. It's to see what the show looked like and what we looked like in 2002. It's pretty funny and a little shocking.
I'm sure you look the same.
Do you feel like Around the Horn has been good for you, good for your career? Is it something that you embrace?
Good for the brand.
Good for the brand.
Good for the Kalischoff brand.
Yeah.
No, it has. I mean, there used to be a thing about a long time ago, you know, if you did two things, you couldn't do either one of them well. And people can certainly argue that, but it definitely brings to mind many more things going on in sports on a national level, and you can find ways to localize a lot of those stories. So not so much the competition or trying to win, but just staying on top of things and being part of that discussion. And on the occasion that you go into you know, different locker rooms or even Dallas teams, players or people know you before you meet them. And that's certainly a nice thing to help you do your job.
I think it's one of the best things that's ever happened to you and to one of our former columnists, Kevin Blackiestone, because you guys are just public figures.
And KB.
Yeah.
The professor.
Yeah. When I go out in public with you guys, whether we go to dinner or something, or just walking around the streets of this great country of ours, people recognize you. It's just great.
Yes. Just mob. It's hard to even go to the store anymore. No, it's not quite like that. But it does occasionally have its benefits in that regard. And it's been a lot of fun.
Well, Tim, we have our editor, Damon Marks. He has the ability to mute you at any point. You did great today. Oh, you have not been muted. You have won.
That's good that I made it this far.
You have won the Sports Day Cowboys podcast. And now the floor is yours. You have 15 seconds of FaceTime, whatever it is you like to say. Let the people know what you're working on. Floor is yours.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, what am I working on? A story about Jimbo Fisher and Steve Sarkisian and just – just the tremendous job those two gentlemen are doing right now. Sarkisian sitting at 10-10 after 20 games, and that Jimbo Fisher buyout. That's just fun to look at. $85 million after this year, $76 million next year, $67 million the one after that. And unlike other buyouts, if he were to leave and take another job, it does not affect it. The Aggies would still owe him all that money. It might be the worst contract in the history of college sports.
So if he leaves and says, I don't know, I'm going to take over Alabama State.
If they fire him.
So if he gets fired and then say Bethune-Cookman says, we want to hire Jimbo Fisher, he's still going to get his money. Wow.
He's going to get the Bethune-Cookman money on top of the $85 million from the Aggies. So he's there for a while.
What a deal. Tim, we appreciate you so much. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, fellas. This has been a wonderful ride. I hope to see you again and hear from you again soon.
Our thanks again to Tim Kalishaw. As mentioned earlier, the Cowboys made a trade Tuesday, adding run-stopping defensive tackle Jonathan Hankins. Have they done enough now before next Tuesday's trade deadline? I Disagree is next.
Hey, listeners. This is Damon Marks. I'm the Cowboys editor for the Dallas Morning News. That includes the Sports Day Cowboys podcast that you're listening to right now. What I love about this beat is the nonstop news cycle that is the Dallas Cowboys. But beyond that daily adrenaline rush, being able to reveal the human side of the players you watch on TV is a privilege. Calvin and Michael talk to these players each week to bring you the behind-the-scenes stories that you can't get anywhere else. If you want to support this good work, it's easy. Just subscribe to the Dallas Morning News and become a member. You'll find a special offer just for listeners at dallasnews.com/listen.
Cowboys Executive Vice President Stephen Jones said you're always looking to upgrade the roster. In fact, he said it's a 365-day-a-year proposition. Have the Cowboys done enough? I say no, they need more work. Michael, what do you say?
I disagree. Now, there is a preface to this where Stephen Jones is 100% right. The roster requires continuous upkeep. It's a living, breathing thing that you need to manage over the course of an entire offseason, season, and so forth. But if you're asking me, with the trade deadline looming next Tuesday, have the Cowboys, you know, do the Cowboys need to make this sizable acquisition? Do they need to really do something that is aggressive, much like the Hankins move they just completed? The answer to me is no. If anything, I look at where the Cowboys are on their defensive line, and I think, gee, they could probably be a seller there because it isn't realistic for them to have as many defensive linemen as they presently have on this roster. I think there are about a dozen when you include Terrell Basham, who has been on injured reserve since suffering a week one quad injury. That's a crowd that the Cowboys have at edge rusher. It's a crowd, frankly, that they have on the defensive line interior, with Neville Gallimore being inactive this past Sunday. So to me, no, they don't need to make any major moves in the next few days here. This is a very talented roster, certainly on the defensive side of the ball. So I'm feeling like the Cowboys should stand pat.
Cowboys, you're right. The Cowboys have a lot of talent along that defensive front, but they can't keep everybody. Jonathan Hankins doesn't need a ramp up. He's ready to play. You know, Chauncey Golston, I thought this guy was going to get a lot of snaps. He's not. Terrell Basham, he was just a guy anyway. Neville Gallimore, I don't believe he's happy being inactive for that Lions game. You can trade somebody because offensively, you got problems. Yes, the Cowboys are running the ball with efficiency, but they are one of four NFL teams with completion percentage below the league average of 64%. You got to upgrade that offense. I'm not saying the offensive line because you got Jason Peters, and maybe he'll get better as the season progresses. But James Washington, the man's got two bad feet. I'm not depending on him. If you can find a receiver to help with that passing game, I would do that. The Cowboys have the talent to upgrade the offense. And hey, it wouldn't even surprise me if they added another corner. They did pick up Kendall Sheffield. They signed him to the practice squad. Not sure when he'll be able to play. He'll probably get a ramp up for about a week or two. It's a cornerback. It's not like he's weighing 800 pounds, so he should be ready to go. The bottom line is you got to upgrade this team, especially on offense, because that's what's holding you back right now.
Is there someone that you want to acquire? I mean, it's very difficult to acquire a wide receiver mid-season, unless you're talking about like an Amari Cooper type of tier where a guy's going to step in and make an immediate impact when he doesn't know the offense. Are you thinking about acquiring like a number one type of guy, a number two, a slot guy? How exactly do you want the Cowboys to upgrade at the receiver position?
There were two teams that made trades for veteran players. Robbie Anderson got traded out of Carolina, and Christian McCaffrey got traded to the 49ers. So, and he played, and check this out, he played because they gave him a small package. You can find a guy on another team, especially on a club that's struggling, might not make the playoffs, because at this stage of the year, you kind of know what you got. That's what Mike McCarthy said 2 weeks ago. After September, you kind of know what kind of team you have. So it's not so much finding someone out on the street. You can find somebody else on somebody else's team and say, let's bring this guy in. Hey, you know what? They traded for Amari Cooper before the bye week back in 2018, and he played. It was okay. It's not a big deal. They can slowly bring someone along. They can get time on task with Dak Prescott or Cooper Rush or whoever the hell is starting that quarterback these days, and they can get him going. Because right now, the Cowboys are a third-place team in the division. And they haven't proven that they can beat the Eagles because they lost to the Eagles. And on Christmas Eve, they're going to play them again. You got to keep upgrading this roster. You got to make another move, in my opinion. Now, whether or not they'll make another move by November 1st, I really don't know. But I think you need to keep trying.
I think it would be a fatal mistake to look at the NFC East standing, see that the Cowboys are in third place, and manage a roster as if this is a third-place talented team. It isn't. This team is better than the Giants. We saw the Cowboys beat the Giants at their place. You're right, they did lose to the Eagles, and we'll see how that situation goes over the months to come between those two clubs. But to me, this is a very talented Cowboys team already. If you want to talk about additions, how about you throw more than two passes to Michael Gallup? He was held without a reception this past Sunday because the Cowboys didn't get him involved. Kevontae Turpin, you know, usually a guy as dynamic as he is, who flashes as much as he has on special teams, probably can be of more use on the offense. I look at the way that the Cowboys are built. I see tight ends. I see, you mentioned the offensive line. To me, this is a pretty well-situated roster going into the trade deadline. You can just continue to make these micro moves. You mentioned the Kendall Sheffield was a perfect type of signing, an experienced cornerback. You added him after you lost Jordan Lewis for the season. Those are the type of moves that Stephen Jones talks about, and those are the moves that the Cowboys should continue to make. Nothing drastic, stay the course.
I just got one thing to say about Michael Gallup. He dropped the pass to him right in the hands. Catch the football, okay? That's all I'm asking. I don't think he's asking for too much. Anyway, that was a good debate, Michael, but that's all the time we've got for Sports Day Cowboys this week. Thanks so much for listening.
The show is produced by Damon Marks, and you can stay up to date on every episode by following Sports Day Cowboys wherever you get your audio, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also find the show and a pretty interesting Emmett Smith podcast, right, Calvin, by following the Dallas Morning News in those same players.
Yes, Michael, we have a special Sports Day Cowboys podcast talking about the 20th anniversary of Emmett Smith breaking the NFL rushing record. So please listen to that. You can also find links to everything we do at dallasnews.com/listen. And you'll also find a special membership offer there just for listeners. And we also want to hear more from you. So email us your questions, comments, and voice memos at dmncowboys@dallasnews.com. And you can also ping us directly on Twitter at @DMN_Cowboys and on Facebook at Cowboys Fan Central. For the news, I'm Calvin Watkins.
And I'm Michael Gelkin. We will see you again during the bye week next week.